Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live over on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, X/Twitter, whatever you're calling it. Also, Instagram, we're live there now as well, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Maybe you're listening later.
Feels good to be on the gram.
On the gram.
That's
finally on
at.
The gram.
Got
a grid going.
We're in a square. Mm-hmm. It's great
yes,
to be in a
it's
square.
It's not, actually. It's the formatting's very bad, but let's not get into it.
Wow.
But whatever it is, this is our first live show of the new year. Thank you so much for coming out. We appreciate it. And we have a very exciting show for you. I'm excited.
Very excited.
All right. Yes.
2024, we're different now. It's all new,
are we?
All different, fresh
Our
ideas.
Resolution is to do a good job this year instead of
there we go.
17
That's what
years.
I like.
No tech mishaps, and I'm Pete from now on.
Those oh, are- wow. Bold move.
Right,
it pays
me.
Off
feels
for
weird.
Yeah,
feels
that
weird.
Is weird. All right, I'll keep being Alex, though, if that's okay with you guys. And I want to introduce our first guest of the evening. You may know him from a ton of different comics like The Other History of the DC Universe, GCPD, The Blue Wall, and many, many more. But why don't we bring him in right now to talk about his new book with IDW, The Ministry of Compliance. Ladies and gentlemen, John Ridley. John, welcome. Yay.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Hello.
Happy New Year to
hey,
all of you.
Happy New Year.
Justin, I love that you're going to be different this year. I've decided my New Year's resolution is to give up. So,
oh, give up.
And I realized
you
I was reminded
it.
This morning I have an interview. I had an interview this afternoon. So as soon as we're done, I'm giving up.
Oh, wow.
This is the
thanks
last
for, yeah, thanks for doing this.
Huge exclusive.
Yeah.
That's it. Tired
we're honored.
To save you.
Strong we're choice honored. For a New Year's resolution is to be like, no.
Yeah, everybody
I'm
wants
done.
To improve. I'm giving up. I'm like, nobody else cares.
I'm going the other way, man.
Let's take it down. Titanic this shit.
Not even that good, though. I can't even sink good. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Oh, you're not even a sink.
Film. I just go down. It's not even pretty. It's just...
Oh, man. Well, listen, why don't we talk about this book, which we love. The second issue is coming out tomorrow in comic book stores, January 3rd. If you're listening to it later, it's already there. Go get it. This is a book. I have to admit, we're fans of yours. We love the stuff you're doing. We loved, like I mentioned, Other History of the DC Universe, Bold Us Over, GCPD, The Blue Wall was fascinating. And, like so much going on in that book. You've become a writer that is really known, I think, for very blatantly adding social issues into superhero universes. But this is something that I think flips it in a certain way. This is a book that still has those ideas in there, particularly without spoiling anything. I think you delve into it a little bit more in the second issue. But it's really mostly there as texture to add into an overall story about, I hope this isn't too much of a spoiler for the first issue, a already successful alien invasion is kind of the way I've been describing the book. So why approach it in this way, and where did the initial germ of the idea come from?
Great questions, Alex, all the way around. And let me just say, first of all, I take you at your word that you like me as a writer. You certainly like me enough to bring me on the show. That means the world to me. It really does.
Oh,
I grew up all, you know, reading comic books. I know it's hard to believe, but I was awkward as a young man. I know you see me now as this fully formed, incredibly gorgeous human being. It's hard to believe, but you know, comic books, graphic novels, whatever you want to call them, at their best, they're about doing right. They're about people stepping up. They're about the best of us is inside of us. Who, you know, who doesn't like that? Unfortunately, not enough people, but I love it. So you saying that means the world to me. In terms of Ministry of Compliance, you know, they're the last 10 years, actually starting in 2024, the last 10 years of my life have been very weird. In that, you know, I started, I'm lucky enough to have a career at all. Let me just say that. I'm lucky enough to be able to have a job. But I've had a nice career. Most of it's been in Hollywood. And the last 10 years have really been, you know, you talk about social commentary and things that to me, you know, look, storytelling, a graphic novel, and forgive me, I know I'm going in a lot of places, but Alex, you ask a great question. So, and I'm giving up after today. So I'm
put it all out there.
Say that thing.
Comic books, and there's a lot of conversations. I wouldn't even say conversations. Look, there's an angry corner of the internet that everything is, oh, it's woke. Oh, it's, you know, oh, why are there women in this comic book? Oh, why are they women of color? Hey, you hurt my head. The reality is graphic novels have almost always, I hate to use absolutes, but almost always been stories of individuals who try to put social context to who we are and what we're about in a way that allows the audience a level of entree. So if you're an immigrant, how do you tell an immigrant story? Well, I can't tell my story, but I can tell, hey, it's an alien. It's from outer space. Yes, he looks like the prevailing culture, but it's about somebody who just wants to show up and show you that I believe in the things that you believe in. And I will step up and I will fight and defend those things. Wonder Woman was not created by a woman, but it was about, hey, guys, guess what? You all, and literally guys, men, you all screwed up the world. We're sending our daughter over here and she's going to be a champion and you're going to have to deal with that. So to me, adding a level, I mean, literally in the first issue that Detective Batman really did the origin story of Bruce Wayne. I mean, really did the origin. This little kid is leaning over his bed. I'm paraphrasing only slightly, but he's praying to God. It's like, oh, please, if you allow me to, I will spend my life warring against crime. War, which is a fight, which makes you a social justice warrior. So that's always been there. And for me, now getting back to this last 10 years, it was just almost by happenstance, it becomes, well, I'm doing 12 Years a Slave. I'm doing Red Tails. I'm doing American Crime. I'm doing, you know, I have a film coming out this year, about Sherlock. So it's just been year after year after year after year. And trust me, I ain't complaining. But it's been very hard stories about very difficult things that happen in marginalized communities. It's great things. And listen, it's not just Black American history. This is American history. It makes us all better, but they're tough stories. And I've done that a lot in a lot of the graphic novels, other history, things like that. So to me, to now, and this is, you know, I'm kidding on the square as I came on talking about, hey, I'm done with you know, the things in the past. But to write something, I got two kids, you know, young men now, really. They're not kids, but they're at that sweet spot age of formative years, of their exploring years, of things like that. But they're also at that age where it's, they like Marvel, they like DC, they like that stuff. And they're the first like, Dad, I love your work. I'm so proud of you. But could you maybe tone it down a little? Could you maybe hit the fun button a little bit? Justin, you had a question to get me to jump in?
Yeah, well, I love hearing what you're saying. And it makes me think, like, when comics were not such a mainstream thing, it used to be a place for these ideas. And that's where I feel like young people would go and be like, oh, no one's saying this. And this, I held my comics so much tighter when I was younger. Because, like, this is the only place I'm getting this story. And I feel like now it's all shifted. So, of course, you know, maybe you're not hitting the fun button because you're like, hey, this is what this was. Like, I think it needs to be this still.
You know, I appreciate you saying that, Justin. You remember. You guys are young. So I'm talking.
But wow. Rod Serling.
Thank you. We're all cool teens here.
We ain't going to go there, but whatever age you put, I got you beat. But Rod Serling, who back in the day, and I, when I was coming up, and I'm certainly, you know, like I joke about, hey, but I wasn't around during the Twilight Zone's, you know, first run, but you know, you watch that. And if you know anything about, if one knows anything about writing at all, particularly television writing, Rod Serling, you know, people know him from the Twilight Zone. This was the guy, you know, Patterns, Velvet Alley. This was the guy who would take on race, anti-Semitism, civil rights, prime time, fighting the censors every step of the way. But he was great. You know, by the time he was 30, I think he had like 6 or 8 Emmys, which back in the day, you know, now they throw Emmys around like candy. But back in the day, you know, well, there's so much more TV. So you kind of got to. I'm not trying to bash the Television Academy. But, you know, But back in the day, you know, to be in your 30s and taking Emmys, like, you know,
yeah,
I don't know what, just, you know, grabbing something off the wall was pretty remarkable. But he really, you know, he got so tired of these fights of like, why do I have to fight to do a story about civil rights? Why do I have to fight to do a story about anti-Semitism? We're going to offend the Nazis. Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
So right. There's a great interview, and anybody who happens to be listening, you can find this. I believe it was Mike Wallace. It's on YouTube. And he does this interview and he says, yeah, he's talking to Mike Wallace, and Mike Wallace said, what's next for you? You got a new show. And he goes, I'm done. I'm done with, you know, talking about social issues. I'm done with all that. I'm doing a fantasy show. It's called Twilight Zone, and it's just going to be sci-fi every week. And of course, anybody who knows Twilight Zone knows that Monsters on Mulberry Street is like a defining show about the pettiness of human beings. And the point being that at some point you got to kind of message to people, yeah, no, this Ministry of Compliance, it's just fun. It's just all fun. No, there's nothing there. That's the old John Ridley does political stuff. I don't do that anymore. And then you get into it and you realize, oh, this is actually about colonialism. It's about representation. It's about who we are. It's about how do we get all of us? I don't care where you vote. We all look at the world, the country, like, okay, why is everyone insane? Ministry of Compliance, as you say, Alex, it kind of jumps with, hey, here's context to the world we live in. But once we go, we're just punching the fun button. Listen, I don't mean just. I hope the writing is good. I will say this, irrespective of whether the writing is good or not, and I'm glad you threw up the cover right there, Stefano, who I'm working with, who I also work with, never met Stefano before, never worked with him before. We did The Blue Wall together. Brad Anderson, who's doing the coloring. Ariana, who's doing the lettering. It's like getting the team back together again. I hope the writing is good, but I will say this. These folks, the talent on this book are stellar. So even if you hate my writing, you should buy this. Don't read. Just page through it and make yourself happy.
Don't throw yourself underneath the bus here. This is a great team all around.
Once you stop caring, it's all good.
Well, I loved, I was reading an interview you did about this book. I don't remember the outlet, I'm sorry, but you were saying that you pulled some of your writing out. Like, you loved the art so much that you were actually cutting some of your writing there to make more space for the action. And I love that because the action scenes are absolutely bonkers. I mean, anybody who's watching live, you see you've got this amazing new character who has a sword. She's chopping people in half. It's very violent, very adult. But as a writer, I mean, you've worn a couple of different hats. Do you feel like it makes it easier since you've been a director, since you've been in the production studio and everything, to take your words and cut them out? Or is that something that still feels like pulling little pieces off of you, kind of?
No, you know, I take the piss out of myself a lot, and I'm fine with that. And there's part of me also, honestly, when you kind of admit the things you don't know in life, it really opens the door to be inquisitive and not be ashamed of asking questions. And then, you know, you get to tell, because people throw word salads around and then you go, okay, well, I'm stupid. Explain that. And then you can really like, okay, can you explain it or not? But to your question about actually taking the words out, and was it hard? When I was a young writer, I mean, when I was really young, and you know, you put a script in and you're lucky enough to get it made, or particularly in television where you're with it all the time and an actor would change something, whether it's by accident or, hey, this flows a little better for me, you know, my head would explode. Are you kidding me? You changed out of the, we're not doing that. Let's go again. I didn't have that kind of juice back then, but that's what you're thinking. But truly there comes a point where for me, and I mean this is not humble brag. I think sometimes some of the best writing, and I'll certainly say for myself, is when you take all the words out. And did you construct something, particularly in a collaborative space where everything, you know, the actors are so powerful, they don't need to say anything. The production design, the lighting, if there's music in the scene, if there isn't music in the scene, what the sound is, and if it's all clicking, why have these words? So there's, I don't know if you can even find the page, if people find the page, but there's a moment after Abigail is given some information by the prime minister, she's hanging out outside. She's having herself a smoke. She looks across the space. Yeah. She sees somebody she doesn't want to see. And then it's like, oh, fuck me. Don't come over. So it used to be a whole internal monologue there. And once Stefano's artwork came in, particularly after Brad's color came in. I'm like, why? Who cares? We just saw this scene. If it were a movie, I would have her outside. I would have her smoking. I would see the joy in her face. And I'm like, well, it's all there. And Stefano's work is there. There's nothing. There's no point. There's no point. So, yeah, it was hard when I was younger, but hopefully if one matures, and I'm not even saying I'm mature, but if one does, you recognize why is Stefano there? Because it's a graphic novel and he's great. And everybody who does something, the editors are great. Everybody I work with is great. So if they're great and it's great, my words don't necessarily make it better. They're just words on a page. And I do think giving people a break and giving them rhythms and giving them, well, there's nothing on this page. What should I be looking at? Let me look. Okay, she's doing this. Yeah, so it's not hard because I think I've grown as a person. How much I've grown is debatable, but I think I've grown enough to take words off the page.
Just to get back to the concept of the book for a second, because I know we mentioned it earlier, but for anybody who isn't familiar, like we said, it's almost this flipped alien invasion where they've already won. They've already taken over the planet. As a reader, it gives you this very off-kilter feel, at least for me when I'm reading it, because we're so used to movies where the alien invaders, they're the bad guys, but these ostensibly are our heroes. These are the people that we're following. Why set it up that way? What intrigued you about that premise?
Well, first of all, I can't believe you said off-kilter, because I'm going to dig up and find the original pitch for this. Off-kilter is like, it's like literally in there, not figuratively in there, it's literally in there. Part of the reason was I've been watching, you know, the holidays come up, you got time off. I go back to the movies that I like. I always liked the bad guy. And I always felt bad for the bad guy at the end because they got their asses kicked. And I was like, oh, well, they did all that work. They built the lair, like L-A-I-R. They, they got their odd jobs or their jaws or whatever. You're like, oh, hey, I found a guy. He's got metal teeth. Perfect. Oh, frick, Bond killed him. Where am I going to find another? You know, you have your sexy, like, assistant who also is great with karate and guns. You know, I mean, it's so you have all this and it's like, you know, you're getting ready to take over the world. And then, you know, it goes down. So I've always had this, you know, just everything like Darth Vader showing up. I'm like, oh, he's more interesting than
and Luke.
But, you know, Luke is a little whiny and Darth has got it all going on. And he's, you know, got a career and everybody's looking up to him. And, so there was that. And then honestly, it was like, look, I don't want to say, oh, look, I'm genius and clever. But, you know, you see alien invasion movies and it's like, same path. We're going to blow everything up. We got a hive mind. Is the hive mind hooked up because we're going to go down to Earth? You know, is everybody connected? Because, you know, God forbid, you know, they kill one person, they're going to kill us all. It's always the same plan. And it's always so easily taken down. It's the portal at the end and all of that. And I just wanted to, well, so what's the flip of that? So they're already here. They're not going to blow shit up because they're going to need it when they're, you know, we literally invented a neutron bomb. So we would just irradiate. So it's like, it's a bad plan to come and blow shit up and have a hive mind and have a portal. So what's the plan? Well, we look like them. They're fairly unstable. We can show up. I mean, we know other people, other bad actors, other entities are using our technology and our mindset against us. So to me, it seemed like a nice spin on colonialism and people go, oh my God, they're awful. And go, yeah, but that's the history of the world. And we didn't have a problem with it. Well, we do, but when we don't, you know, we don't want to be a colony, but we want colonies, whether they're economic colonies, political colonies. But again, I want to dig these people, but it's also, you know, storytelling, as I know you all know, is you can't start at the end. So if they're starting as bad people, chances are there's going to be something about them at the end where you go, oh, there was some development, there was growth, they're different. They may not be still, you know, Luke Skywalker at the end is an amazing, you know, that is a true classic hero journey. Yes, he's whiny at the beginning, but no, he becomes this hero and that's what you're supposed to do.
That's the classic journey, whiny to hero.
Whiny to hero, exactly. So me, I like seeing, you know, Darth Vader, of course, he did get a journey at the end of all this too. But I do like that. And look, again, going back to something you said earlier, you can do that in comic books. In real life, of course, do I want to see the bad guy win? No. But in comic books, do I want to see the more evolved species come down here and maybe teach us some lessons and maybe we win at the end of this? Maybe we're the winners. because maybe we learned something. So I don't want to give anything away, but I do, you know, it's like, you know, Requiem for the Bad Guy, I think.
First off, I want to say shouts for you. I'm hyping Darth Vader for his career. You don't usually hear that.
It's a career, you know? You got to be in charge. Oh,
I admired his Star
Destroyer. All right, I'll go. All right, you know what? I'll go. I just feel bad for the guy. Nobody.
He has to fly his very tiny little ship out there. That's like the worst ship.
Right.
That's the other thing is that, you know, when you look back on it, it's like, well, you know, yeah, why is Darth Vader's ship such a shitty ship? Listen, that's a whole other.
But I also want to say, like, what I love about this book is, like, what you're saying, it's the aliens have succeeded so hard that there's, like, a sort of annoying bureaucracy that they're trying to figure out for a lot of this. And I think I love the high stakes value of that, but it's also very funny how much that is their concern. And then we get some boiling, maybe a rebellion here. But when the ministers walk in the first issue, walking through sort of how we got here, how they took over, I was like, you know what? They're sort of right here. And I, a human, am even rooting for, I'm like, I want to be there. They got
If I got
out.
You, I got all of the world.
Yeah.
But you know what? I mean, that was kind of the thing is like, can you root for, you ask a very good question. Can you root for the bad guy? And I want to be careful because, look, I love my planet. I'm certainly not bagging on my planet. And I just want to say that Earth is still the best planet.
Yeah, shouts to Earth. Solar system. We can get on board with Earth.
Yeah. I don't know. Nobody.
One of my favorite planets.
I don't want to run for president one day and somebody goes, didn't you bash Earth? Could you not be an ally to the aliens, sir, if you were president?
I like how you're giving up. You're still keeping running for president on the board of possibilities. You know what I mean?
Well, only because that's like the job now in America, apparently, where that's like the bar has been lowered the most.
You have to give up on everything else pretty hard, and
before you can be president. Oh my god. We were talking about something semi-serious though a moment ago. We were discussing the bad guy is the hero. I do feel like, to me, that concept of ultimately seeing something in someone else that we don't see in each other. And to me, that concept that they're coming to Earth, that they are arriving as the superior species. And at the end of the day, you sort of realize, well, I'm not actually better. And we thought we were superior. And it's taken us way longer. There's something about Earth. And this, you know, again, a kid on the square, but part of the story is for all the things we get wrong, there is something about Earth and there is something about humanity and there is something about, you know, if we really are, you know, the only life form, higher life form in the universe, which I doubt, but if we are, I'm talking to individuals who are converted. You all here and anybody who's listening is down for this, but we got a lot of work to do and we can do better. And I think a lot of, you know, part of the question was, where did this story come from? I think a lot of it was a reaction to who we are and my belief that we're better than this, and a message to people without being, you know, the dial to 11 and a lot of the things that I've done in the past, that we can be better than this. And it's fun. I think Abigail is fun. Kingsley's fun. Quinn is fun. There's a lot of, like I said, punching the fun button, but there are also moments when we talk about life as a social structure, you know, a hard social structure, almost a corporate structure. Would we do better if everybody had certain expectations? I mean, look, I don't, and I do mean this, I'm not in any way, shape, and form in favor of the Communist Party in China. You talk about human rights abuses and things that can happen, obviously, anywhere and everywhere. But you also look at command and control. Now, their command and control, at the end of the day, they're still dealing with COVID in ways that we aren't. And trust me, I don't know that we did a great job, but we did a job in very effective ways because it is America, because we could do moonshots, because we could get that vaccine, because, you know, because of a lot of things, look, things we could have done better, things we could have done worse. Command and control doesn't always work, but you do look at China and you go, oh, okay, there are things where it happens because it's going to happen. There are things that are good. There are things that are awful. How would that work if that was universally applied? That's a lot of what Ministry of Compliance is about.
Yeah.
Alex, just
one last comment. Like,
no. Like, I have a crazy question. You do your serious question.
No, I just a comment more. Like, it feels like you're using some of that ministry, that very communistic language, Ministry of Compliance, the different that feels very like Orwellian and communistic in a way. And I think that.
Yeah, I mean, it is definitely meant to feel. And for people who we've talked around this a little bit. So the idea with this invasion is because there's so many facets to it in terms of hidden persuaders that are in every aspect of society. They're in business. They're in sports. They're in entertainment. They're in politics. They're everywhere. And so you have these different ministries that then oversee sports. Are we doing what we need to do to influence people through sports? Are we doing what we need to do? And when I say influence, that means soften up the world so that there's so much strife, there's so much misinformation, there's so much mistrust, and people are broken up. What we hope for on the planet Earth is when we need to come together, we come together. We saw, in my opinion, during COVID, us not necessarily coming together. I think we came together in the big ways. It was the little ways that were surprising that we couldn't come together to make. Those then became the bigger ways. Those then became ways now that, you know, if I hold up a vax card, some of you may feel one way, may feel another way. If you don't have a vax card, I may feel one way, you may feel another way. And ultimately, are those the things that we should ultimately be arguing about when we're trying to just save lives? And maybe some of it's crazy, yeah, but we'll figure it out and we'll save the lives because that's most important. So that's what we hope our default is. These aliens are trying to break up those defaults so that we can't work together. And the idea is you have all these ministries that are working to soften up and do as much as they can to fracture the world. But the question was brought up earlier, a statement was brought up earlier that there's a lot, you know, the aliens show up and they are a little bit petty and things like that. So you have the Ministry of Compliance that is basically watching over everybody and saying, comply. You've been told to do this. You need to do this. And if you don't do this, the individual that you showed on the, when you show on the cover, that's Abigail Sinha, the lead character. She shows up with her sword and she gets to chopping. So there's that. That's what the Ministry of Compliance as a series is about. And that's where, as Justin, you're talking about these sort of, you know, these command and control, these Politburo type narratives that are built in. That's where they're baked into the equation. And that's where you start hitting the fun button with the bureaucracy, and Abigail is the lead character. She's also, you know, we were joking, but you're now, I feel like I'm on the couch now, but you know, you talk about Darth Vader having a crap job. That's a lot of what Abigail, where I hope the fun comes from, because she shows 100%. Up and goes, oh, fuck. She's killing all these guys. The first thing is, this is so much fucking paperwork I'm going to have to do.
Yeah. She's dealing with shit all day in this
constantly.
Book.
She is tired of it. And to me, that's also very honestly, and I hadn't thought about that as much, but that really was my default with Darth Vader going all the way back. It was just like,
that's so funny. Fucking,
you know, in the first movie, it was just, your job is just taking care. I will go myself. No underlings. And this time, Captain, no underlings. You know, it's just like, what the F, man?
I love the idea of you as a kid being like, what's Darth Vader's payroll obligation like? He's force pushing this pen across his desk.
But I really, I'm telling you, it's like probably wasn't that intense. And this is probably me revisiting myself. But part of it, I know, was James Earl Jones voicing Darth Vader. Part of it was he's this badass and all in black. Part of it, but you know, it's sympathy for the devil. It's, you know, all that stuff where it's like, oh, you're the fucking, and you got a cape. Oh, and you got a cape. Oh, and you can kill a guy across the room. Alex, you said you had a crazy question.
It's kind of a crazy question, Pete, if I'm totally wrong about this.
I'm not leaving until Pete asks a question.
Pete's going to ask you about your background eventually. We'll get there. Is that what you wanted to ask about, Pete? I'm just going to ask this quickly, and then we can go over to you for a question.
About background.
When we're talking about influences, when I read the first issue, this got stuck in my head, and I couldn't get it out, so I just wanted to ask you, was this at all influenced by the movie Equilibrium?
You know... Gunkata.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm going to be one of those people who actually would admit to liking Equilibrium. One of the things I liked about that movie so much is you. Is this a spoiler? There's going to be a spoiler. I'm going to do a spoiler, so
you can spoil the movie for a while.
I'm saying it now. So I don't know if you're just don't listen for all the people who are like, oh my god, I'm going to go out and watch Equilibrium right now. 15, 17 years later, I'm going to rush out and I'm going to get. But it is a pretty good movie. If you've like never seen 1984 or read 1984. Right, which that was the one where they got all the stuff and they burn it. Yeah, that Fahrenheit 451, 1984. Yeah. It's all of this. But the scene that I loved in that was the big build up. It's Taye Diggs and it's Batman, Christian Bale, and there's sword and they're lining up and they're gonna have this big fight and you've been waiting all movie for this fight, and Christian Bale does one thing, and then a second later. Taye Diggs' face slides off. And that's, it was like build up. So clearly I've seen the movie. Clearly I like the movie. Clearly I remember the movie. Although all I do is watch movies, watch. I wouldn't say was influenced by it directly, but I would say that all of those kinds of, I've been influenced by every single thing I've ever seen, ever read. I mean, everything out in the world. Mm-hmm. So I don't, like I said, I don't often like to use absolutes, but every single thing is, you pilfer, you take a little bit, you build on the things you love, I didn't like that, so don't let me do that. Oh, I hated all that, but man, that shot that they did in there, that was brilliant. How can I take that, re-engineer it, but use that language? That's the other thing. You got to understand the language. You can't just use things. You got to understand the language of things. And what I loved about that in that film was a lot of the language, a lot of it is, you can pull things. But when people it's like a recipe. You can go to a million books, get that same recipe, but somebody, I'm going to add this, I'm going to take that, I'm going to do it in a way. It's the presentation, it's all of it, and that's something special. So I can't believe you pulled that up. You guys are genius level. Not directly, but I really enjoyed that film. And by the way, if you're ever like scrolling through and you want a good, quick, fun film that, let me tell you, it actually has a couple of surprises. The hero's going to be a hero and he can't quite get there in time. I was like, oh, fuck. And a moment with his son at the end where you're like, oh, I didn't see that coming. Pretty good stuff.
Yeah, awesome. This is great. Every week I ask a guest, were you influenced by Equilibrium? And this is the first time I've gotten a good answer. So
No one knows the movie except for you.
It never works. Pete, did you want to ask about what's behind it?
Let me ask you real quick. Did you feel badly that I could actually answer the question?
No. I loved it. That's great. Legitimately, I looked at it and I was like, oh, Equilibrium, that was a cool movie that I haven't thought about for a while. And then I read Ministry of Compliance and I was like, that favorably reminded me of it. 100%. Think about the Taye Diggs' face sliding off scene at least once a week.
I'm so awful. This is why I have no friends, because I will talk about like movies that even like fans of stuff are like, no, I'm just kidding, John.
That's not a real question. You were like, no gotcha questions. And Alex was like, no problem. I'll ask about the movie from 2002 that no one has ever spoken of.
I know. I would hate to see what your actual gotcha questions are
exactly.
like.
Exactly. That's what you think the regular question is.
Yeah.
So on page 4 of the 4th issue of Black Panther, what was the third word in the second bubble?
That's a guy.
Well, listen, I know we're probably going to have to let you go in a little bit, but there are a couple of other things that I wanted to ask you. First, though, I want to give it to Pete, who does want to ask you something.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I don't really have a question per se, but I just wanted to say thank you so much for your writing. I really love how badass this story is. You get to see a lot of slicing and dicing, and, I'm here for it. It's really badass, and I think a lot of your work has this element of badass to it, so I thank you. Is there anything on your wall, because I'm always obsessed with people's kind of nerd walls and stuff. Is there anything you want to shout out or point out? Because my eyes are not as good as they once were. And
I'm sitting in the dark too, because that's me. Part of my giving up is not even turning on lights. But I will say that, Pete, first of all, can you just move into my house and just sit here and I come downstairs in the morning and just tell me how much you
want? Oh, man, yeah, I'd love to hype you up every day, man. Get your day going.
I don't have a question. I just want to tell you you're great. Where were you when I was 13? Are you on Cameo? Because you just, so on my wall back, I didn't turn on my light. Hold on. I'm not going. I'm just going to turn on the light.
Okay, cool.
So you can see some of these things.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, is that a Catwoman in the background?
Looks like it.
No, that is not Catwoman. No. So if you can just see over here, this is my Jace Fox by Jim Lee.
There's
a cover of one of the
I love
Batman.
Yeah, Jim Lee, my favorite. Yeah,
drew that, and he actually. This was the weirdest day of my life. Jim Lee drops by to give it to me personally. He just shows up because he's like the nicest guy, and I seriously, he's the king of San Diego. He's in what's that?
He's the king of San Diego.
He's in my book. He's the king of the universe because anybody who like will show up with their drawn Batman that is probably that's a Jim Lee. It's like literally priceless. So there's that. And then this right here is, my wife gifted this to me. This is actually the lyrics and I believe the music, although I don't read music, to No Ordinary Love by Sade.
Oh, wow.
Oh, hell yeah.
Wow. And then this is Sade, which if you understand, if you want to know why I love my wife, because not a lot of wives would let you hang a picture of like the Supreme Queen on your wall. And then also gifts you like the lyrics to the
song. How long have you been married?
With, our wedding and all of that. So that's why my wife
is Sade, right?
Is my wife Sade. If she, I don't know that I would be on with you guys right now if she was. And that's no slight to you, but I really would just be laying around just. Staring at her, she's actually on the wall over here. In fact, I think I have
a full day of staring
she's here as
day.
Well.
Yeah,
oh, wow,
that's a lot. That's a lot.
You say a lot, I say not enough.
Wow, this is a big right. You are going down. You are giving up.
I could
you
be staring at Sade right now.
Let me tell you please something. Don't bother me. She's
I love it.
It's respect.
I do want to get back to comics before we wrap up here, but I had a couple of quick questions for you.
Now we've moved on to Sade. I don't think we can. I don't know that we can.
we can't get past this. I believe that like almost 10 years ago at this point, you were developing a Marvel project for ABC that didn't work out when it got changed over to Marvel Studios. Are you able to say at this point anything about what that was? Because I've always been very curious. I don't know if it's still in the works somewhere or anything like
that. It's not in the works anymore. I think because of, I don't know. I have to honestly think whether I signed a non-disclosure about that or not. I don't think that I signed a non-disclosure, which is weird to me because I've had to sign a lot of them. It was, I kind of have to think, but I'm pretty sure that it was what are they going to do? They fire me? They fire me from the work that I'm not doing? I think it was a television version of The Eternals.
Wow.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
But good.
Well, they're probably not doing that.
But good.
But good. Wow. There it is.
Amazing.
But let me tell you something. It was my version of the good version. It was so fucking weird. It starts with the kid, and there was my version, the good version, which is good to me, which that means I don't mean anything. There was the version that we ended up doing, which I don't think that version was particularly good. I'll be honest, and for all kinds of reasons. But my version started with the first thing you see a young man, probably about 17, 18 years old, and he's sitting there for a moment. And then he lifts his hands, he has a drill in it, and he turns the drill on, and he puts the drill to his ear, and he starts pushing it in. And then it goes from there.
That's awesome.
And
it goes from there. That's the start.
Right, that's how it starts. And then I think you see him, like, another kid has to sleep in the he sleeps in the bathtub, cover himself with foil. It's just a really weird story about these people it's just weird. So... it was good to me. That means nothing. Let me put it that way. It was the good that to me, which also means very little because the stuff I like is the first stuff that gets canceled.
Did you see any of the bones of that in the Eternals movie, or was it something that just was an earlier version and didn't get used at all?
I can say safely I didn't see the bones of that.
Oh, okay.
But, it was... you got to understand. I know you understand. It was like the best thing that could have happened to me was it didn't go, because it wasn't good. And I probably wasn't the right person for it. And I probably couldn't make it what it needed to be. And other really hyper-talented people, you know, some people loved it, some people didn't love it. Some people thought it was a great departure. Some people, I think in retrospect, would go, oh, maybe Marvel should do more departures like that. So it's not whether it's good or bad. It didn't work. It's a really hard property. I can tell you the best thing to happen for everybody was that it didn't happen with me, because I don't know that it would have been entertaining to me. And I do mean what's entertaining to me is often not populist, which is great for a lot of the work I do, but this needed to be a little bit more popular. Mm. It really did.
To get back to the comics before we do let you go, though, and thank you for that. Really appreciate it. That solved a long-running mystery in my mind, at least. The
Equilibrium and
those were my two big questions going into the interview. The Ministry of Compliance.
You got more good, like, well, for the eight people who are interested in the stuff that I do, you got some good, and I'm going to drop one more thing before I leave on you that you can, like, I don't know, try to message it, like somebody may find a slight bit of interest in it, but who knows, you may have a leak, a break that I can give you.
Ooh, all right, well, maybe this tees it up potentially. I was curious, I'm sure you get this all the time, but like, you've done work for Marvel, you've done work for DC, you're doing the IDW stuff now. Are you drawn to one more than the other, or is it just the field of comics that you're enjoying?
That's a really good question, and they're all very different. That's the thing that has really surprised me. You know, I've gone from, you know, doing very little work to working a lot. The companies are different. How they manage things are different. The things that I, you know, obviously the things that I like that they manage well, I'm like, oh, this is great. The things that are different sometimes, like, oh, that other company does this. You know, well, daddy lets me do this, mom. Dad always lets me. And they are different. They're not good or bad. They're just very, very different. My experiences are different. You know, my experiences with Marvel's tough because they are really interlocked. You know, they come at you like it's very interlocked, and we're building these sandboxes. We build the guardrails for you very tightly. And that helped a lot, I have to say, particularly when you're doing Black Panther. When you're walking into a job where there's a lot of focus on it, having that kind of help and having those kind of guardrails, I mean, I don't know what I would have done. It would have been very easy for that to have been a disaster. If you liked it, you could have hated. If you loved it, you would have liked it. If you liked it, you would have hated it. So I got to give a lot of praise to the editors at Marvel for being really good. And sometimes you're like, just let me be creative. And they're like, no, but, and it works. And I have to acknowledge that works. My experience with DC, and also I will say coming into DC is a little different, because the only ongoing series I wrote for DC was my series. And it was intentionally very separate from a lot of what was at the core of the DC universe. So for me, for my schedule, for my life, it was like, oh, I can do this and I can dip in with the Bat group. I can see what's going on. If there's something there that needs to be addressed, I can address it. But if everybody's okay with me doing my own thing, I'm going to do my own thing. And then obviously IDW, you know, it's a independent publisher. But the great thing was almost everybody that I'm working with at IDW, you know, sadly, the business is contracting. All of entertainment is contracting, maybe right-sizing, maybe contracting. Unfortunately, that means a lot of terrific people, you know, transition from other places. But a lot of the folks that I work with at IDW, I'd worked with at DC Comics, and it has been a phenomenal, it's the best of all worlds, where people know you well enough to give you really solid advice and keep you from really embarrassing yourself in public. But they also know you well enough where it's like, okay, you want to try it? Try it. Let's see what it looks like, and then, you know, we'll figure it out. And there's a lot of trust. I will say, and I mean this, I've been lucky enough to have a career that's now 30 plus years, and I've never had experiences that I've had that are as pleasurable, as deep, as rich, as meaningful as I had in comic books. The writing, the execution, the collaborative nature, and then with the fans, with folks like yourself who really know the space, and really, you know, you can ask questions about Equilibrium. You can ask questions about this. I mean, I love that. And I love that you would ask a question that I would know the answer to. And you may ask 100 other questions I don't know the answer, but you'll ask that one where I'm like, oh my God, you like that? You're even aware of that? That's why this community, in my opinion, is the best community. And yes, it gets a little intense sometimes. Unfortunately, it gets a little toxic, but ignore those people because they're not fans. There's a reason the first almost interracial kiss on television was on Star Trek. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a reason that the people that we admire as storytellers, a lot of them do come from fantasy and sci-fi and those stories. You know, I heard somebody talking about what the Lord of the Ring, the extended massive, you know, why are these stories, why are the Star Wars, Marvel's, DC, Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings, when they work, why are they so massive? Because those are the things, the imagination, wish fulfillment, that's what real fans are about. They're not about, oh, why it's toxic, it's too woke or whatever. It's too woke, great. Then read something else. It's not quite you, that's okay. But you don't need to just go read something else. It's a free country. You're saying something about you when you say things about that. And by the way, and then I'll get off my soapbox. I write a lot of articles. I do things like that. Here's the thing for the folks who are anti-woke. The reality is in Hollywood, at the end of the day, it is a business. Films, television shows, things that have BIPOC, things that show the world, they do better economically. That's not my opinion. Read the UCLA financial reports. They do better because everybody feels welcome. So there are these conversations out there about, oh, it doesn't work. The Black Panther, you know, Wonder Woman, first Marvel. Second Marvel, it doesn't work. A lot of things don't work. And it didn't work for a lot of reasons. You know, I'm sorry. Everybody who saw, even people who hated the film, say the leads are phenomenal, wonderful. Yeah. It's engaging. It's just, you know.
Yeah.
You bat 275, you're in the Hall of Fame.
John, that's amazing. I love it. And we really do love the books. Before I let you go, you said you were going to maybe break tease something.
Yeah, what's your drop?
Here's what I'm excited about in 2024. And I will say this, you kicked it off so well. It was so exciting to start the new year talking about graphic novels, talking about comic books, talking about something I love. So thank you.
Thank you.
I am really excited because 2024, can't quite say yet, but this is the year in comic books I'm going to revisit a character that I've been away from for a little bit. I'm so excited. And what I'm really excited about, we're digging a little bit more deeply into a universe. I'm always leery about when people throw around universe, not my universe, but a universe of characters who I love and a new character who's going to be coming out of this fully formed. And I'm so excited for all of them. But this is working with I love all the artists I've had the opportunity to work with. This one, off the hook, just great. And it's going to be a terrific series. But more than anything, it's just great to come back and revisit and be with and spend time with some of these characters. And I'm telling you, man, when I said I'm giving everything up, I mean, giving up everything except writing comic books. As long as you guys are around and folks like you, I'm writing comic books. So when this other one finally comes out this year, I'd love to come back and talk about it, because it may be, it's like talking about your kids. I love them all, but this one may be one of my favorites. This will be the kid. He's going to get into NYU. That's how good this kid is.
Are you at all able to say which publisher or any more hints in that direction, or am I pushing too much?
But it would, if I say which, then people won't dive into the internet and dig around and play this clip back for clues.
Exactly. What did he say?
Did he say he, she, or they? What did he say?
Yeah.
Can't quite give that formal announcement yet, but it is at a comic book publisher that publishes comic books.
That narrows it down quite a bit.
Yeah, that helps.
Awesome.
John, please do come back.
Yes, absolutely. This was absolutely a pleasure. Happy New Year to you. Congratulations on Ministry of Compliance. It rules. Yeah. I cannot wait to read.
Listen, Pete, Alex, Justin, thank you so much. Thank you for doing what you're doing. Appreciate it. I will see you all later. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year
to everybody in the sound of my voice. And hey, everybody, I've been saying this now since like 2019. This year is going to be a good year. This year is where we get all of our crap together. So I can't do it alone, particularly since I'm giving up. So I'm counting on everybody, all 9 billion of you, to get it together this year, because I don't want to have to keep saying next year is going to be a good year. It's all on you. I give up. Yeah. Thank you, gentlemen. I'll see you all later.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Have a great night.
Thank you.
All right, there we go. That was John Ridley. Don't forget to check out Ministry of Compliance.
Oh, yeah.
The new issue from IDW is out tomorrow, January 3rd. And whatever that is that he's hinting at, that's coming up. But listen, that's not the...
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, we got to do the research. But we got to put that on hold because John is not the only guest that we have on the show. We have another amazing guest for you this evening who has been very patiently waiting in the little area below where I'm looking here. And we really appreciate it.
Oh, that's a fun behind the scenes, Alex.
There you go. Everybody's always wondering about like the tech of the show. They're always asking about that. They're like, I don't want to know about your reviews. I want to know about your interviews. Tell me how the tech of the show works more. And do this movement.
People love it. Yeah, they do that. This is like they're little cats. You're talking about cats. Exactly. Pretty kitties.
This guy has done so many things. I can't even begin to list them. He has a wild changes of careers over the past couple of years and is currently doing comics with one of our favorite new comics of the past year, Scrapper, which is now out in stores and the hardcover is out April 23rd. Ladies and gentlemen, Cliff Bleszinski.
Hey, Cliff,
thank you. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for waiting.
No problem.
For coming on.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
The time was flying. I have a mimosa, so I'm good.
Hey, it's always brunch time somewhere.
But seriously, thank you so much for having me. And you guys are very engaging. And he was a tough act to follow.
Listen, can I give a little bit of background about you? I mean, I assume most people know, but like you were instrumental behind Gears of War. And one of the guys who kicked off, at least at the beginning, with Fortnite. So that's the video game stuff. But then you moved on. You produced Hades Town. You wrote Eight Tonys Later.
Yeah.
You published an autobiography last year, Control Freak. And now you have a comic book. You've moved over into the comic book industry. So that's a lot of stuff. But a fact that blew my mind, Cliff, you were in the first issue of Nintendo Power.
Yes, I was.
The rest of the interview, by the way, is going to be about this.
So. The nerd Bible.
I would like to talk about Equilibrium, though. But
sorry, we've hit our quota on Equilibrium for the year. Never we blew it.
It's just that movie got buried by the Matrix, unfortunately. Anyway, it was 9,999,950, and I got to mention that when I did Fallon for some reason. That's Microsoft's PR people set that up, but I did video games for 25 years, and I kind of got burnt out because things felt like they were kind of toxic. And then doing the Broadway thing, I found out that Broadway fans can be toxic. And then moving into the comic book world, I found out.
No worries there.
Everything.
Comic skate, all that stuff. I'm like, what am I doing right now? But, you know, at the end of the day, I just want to make cool stuff and affect people, you know, and learning this comic book world has been utterly fascinating. And it's such a weird story as to how it all happened. I mean, I was a comic book fan since I was a kid. I grew up with Spider-Man and then eventually graduated to like Preacher and then The Boys and all that. And I think we're in the era of the postmodern superhero. I mean, I saw Watchmen on your shelf back there, Alex. I mean, that was the start of the postmodern superhero kind of era. And then just figuring out like the language of comics and learning the world, you know, top left panel, this happens, boom, boom, turn the page, full page splash, blah, 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 blah. And learning how the sausage is made. And I just hope getting engrossed in this world, it doesn't fucking ruin it for me. my wife's a big gamer. She's literally Twitch streaming right now. Right. And that's the thing. It's like, I don't want to play anything right now. Like I started the new Mario. It was great. And then I got to one level where I got stuck and I'm like, screw it. I don't want to deal with that. And that's the thing about, you know, Broadway and being a producer on Broadway and seeing, you know, the capitalization of what it costs to make a Broadway show. And, you know, I went and saw Beetlejuice, which it's a great show. Yeah. And I'm like, that show probably cost 20 to 30 million to capitalize. Right. Whereas Hadestown was pretty modest, one stage, one set, good lighting. It's just comic books, I think, are just amazing. And I just, my thing lately, I'm not playing a lot of video games. I just love sitting at a pub with my wife. She's playing Pokemon Go or playing her Switch, and I'm reading, you know, a comic book, you know, with my reading light, you know, and that's my life these days.
Have you found awesome. With all of these different skills you're picking up? I mean, I imagine the answer is kind of yes, but have you been able to take little lessons from each? Like, are there things from the video game industry you were able to take to Broadway, to restaurants, to books, to comic books?
Well, there's one of the many lessons I've learned over the years. I'm about to turn fucking 49.
An underlying theme on this
we're killing it today.
There's plenty of industries you haven't done yet, so hang in there, buddy.
Yeah, wait for it. You just wait, adult film.
Yeah. Oh, great to enter in your 50s. The 50s is the year.
Yeah. Let's be snorting Viagra like. Anyway, so the thing I actually found is there's a fair amount of overlap apart from the finances over here. You think about a video game and what everything having to come together between the perfect blend of art and science. Right. And that's the thing is like you have, you know, characters and the way they look and concept art and then they get modeled. And then you think about the engagement and players want that sense of flow. You know, there's an entire book that was written about flow. And for me, I get that when I read. And I get that when I read comics. I get that when I play a good video game. I get that when I get a good Broadway show. And that's the thing is, you know, you look at Hadestown, which is such an amazing show. And the thing is, you know, you look at the lighting, you look at the blocking, you look at the choreography, you look at the music, you look at the band playing, you know, on stage, like all of that, you know, and same thing with video games, the music in the background. And at the end of the day, what it all comes down to is people wanting to feel something. Right. Because, you know, the world feels so dark. I mean, one of my tattoos on my wrist is comedy and tragedy. And that's the thing is, you know, there's this old speech by Jimmy Valvano, who is a North Carolina college hoops coach. And he says, if you do three things in one day, laugh, think, cry, that's a good day. Do that 7 days a week. You're living a good life. And I love things that make that move me. You know, it's it goes back to that Nicole Kidman corny ass AMC commercial. Mm-hmm. Right. And the thing is, it didn't come across as they intended, but they had a point, you know, like we gather in a room to experience things. And that's the thing about getting involved in the comic book world is like going to, and I learning so much about the way the world works. Like, you know, Kevin Smith knew this many, many years ago, you know, the term LCS, I was like, what the fuck is that? You know? And so I go to my local comic shop. And there's this guy who works there named Sequoia, super cool dude. And I go in there and, you know, the smell of the fresh ink, right? And the whole, what's in your pull list? Like, what's new? Like, the, you know, the culture of it all. And, like, I respect Comixology. I respect digital comics. But no, fuck that. I want the real thing. I want the floppies. And by the way, we had the benefits of partnering with Image Comics is we had the Michonne. Walking Dead variant cover.
That's so cool.
Which I bought the actual Michonne issue original in mint condition, which I put it as an investment. It's sitting upstairs. And that's the thing is I can't believe you guys didn't mention to John that the character in his current book kind of has Michonne vibes with the, you know, being badass black woman with a katana, you know?
Like, yeah.
But anyway, I digress. So back to Equilibrium.
Well, let's actually digress into the thing that we're talking about, which is Scrapper, because we really did love this book. So this is sci-fi tale about a dog who has other abilities. I'm not going to necessarily say what, just because it delves into it over the course of the story. But he is fighting against authority in this future world with a bunch of other talking and non-talking animals. Now, not to set you up for something a little more emotional, but this, you talk about this in the back matter of the hardcover a little bit. This came out of losing your real life dog and then eventually turning it into this comic book. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. If you look behind me, you can see my shrine to my Australian Shepherd that I lost during the development of the first Gears of War. I'm going to try and make this fast for you guys. I was going through a divorce and I... here's my little muse over here for it. We'll get there. And I had him for 13 years and I had my own video game studio and that eventually, unfortunately, cratered. And then he couldn't walk anymore and he had other health issues and I realized I had to let him go. Still gets me. And then after the year of spontaneous crying, my wife found this Pomsky, right? Which is a Pomeranian mixed with a husky. I really, you know, feel like dragging her on camera because she's there's a reason why my company is called Aloof Floof. So we were up. We actually went to the final season premiere of Game of Thrones in Manhattan. The season was uneven, but I'm friends with a bunch of the people who work on it. Weird flex, but okay. And we party with the cast until 4 a.m. And then we flew down to Charlotte, scooped up this little muffin, flew back to Raleigh, and she just became my muse. And I looked at her and I thought, has there ever really been a badass dog superhero? You know, that's the thing I said in the backsplash, whatever the fuck the term is. I'm still learning this stuff. Backscatter, back matter. I don't know.
Back matter.
Back matter. Yeah. Matter, backsplash is sort of a better term for it, maybe.
Yeah. And just, I'm literally in the process every evening now of signing book plates, which I learned for the memoir. Like that. And I start getting bored after a couple of cocktails. I start drawing things on them like Alex did. Anyway. So the genesis of it was, it also came back from, you know, the Broadway stuff where I love New York. One of my favorite stories was I was in Manhattan and I looked around and I saw stray dogs, stray cats, raccoons, pigeons, rats. And I was like, as Jeff Goldblum famously said, life finds a way. And speaking of which, one of my favorite stories is before I met my wife. I was in downtown, or we live in Raleigh, North Carolina. I was in downtown Raleigh and I was trying to roll on this young Southern girl. And I'm like, she's like, I don't make it out to the big city that often. And I'm like, yeah, I only make it up to Manhattan 2-3 times a year. And she's like, I'm talking about Raleigh. Yeah. And that's the thing. But the thing is, just like, you know, you look at what's going on in the world with, you know, I respect the police, but, you know, they're kind of over militarized at this point. You look at, you know, our democracy feels like it's kind of teetering on the edge right now. You look at, you know, these animals that are abandoned. You look at gentrification, and that's kind of a lot of where it all came from. And then when I met up with Alex DeCampi, and her and I just vibed. She's just this badass mom, lives in Hell's Kitchen. She's so smart.
Yeah, she is badass.
Her book, Parasocial, I don't know if it's out yet. It's basically misery for the Comic-Con generation. it's great. And then I was like, you know, it all kind of just like Voltron or Devastator kind of came together in my head. And then, you know, finding the right writing partner was really tricky. But the thing is, I decided, I was like, you know, as much as I respect my former employer, Epic Games, and what they've done with Fortnite, I don't see a dime off of that. And so, you know, right. You look at what Todd McFarlane did, you know, starting Image Comics, you know, Image knows that I own the IP. Like I funded it myself, and you know, I've already had a meeting with a major internet streaming service to possibly have it be an animated series, and fingers crossed something could happen with it.
Awesome.
And yeah, so it's been a really fascinating journey, and just as Da Vinci said, I'm always learning, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, so when you're talking about, obviously you had like dogs, you had your muse in mind, your two muses, I guess. What went into choosing which dog breeds you would do? As a dog lover, it feels like that's a buffet you have in front of you.
Well, I'm vain. And, you know, they always say adopt, don't shop. And I know I should have adopted dogs. But I'm like, my argument that I use, and it's totally shitty, is like, would you rather have a cheeseburger you found on the side of the highway that you don't know like where it was made? Or would you rather have like a custom made one that was just like made by like a legendary chef or something like that? And I, you know, there's so much that goes into temperament and whatnot. And you know what? Hang on, I'm a grabber.
Oh, yay. I knew this was gonna happen as soon as he was like, oh, too far away. I was like, we're gonna see that dog by the
end. It's a Chekhov's dog.
Look at those laser eyes. Oh, hilarious. She's like, I don't do appearances.
Yeah, this is like my third podcast today.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, you know, she's mostly husky, right? She's we did the genetic.
I was didn't expect to see that much husky there.
Yeah, she's genetically 75% husky. And the thing is, you know, we're all slaves to the algorithm these days on across all platforms, and YouTube and, you know, Instagram stories, they've picked up, sorry, mimosa
morning.
the algorithms picked up the fact that I love watching husky videos, and like the thing is, the breed is just so beautiful, and for me it was the perfect you know, pick. You know, what am I gonna do, like a chihuahua? Like come on, you know. So that's the thing, is I love dogs. I don't trust anybody that doesn't love dogs and doesn't swear, right? It's just it's one of those things.
No problem here.
And like, come on, can you guys tell me a badass dog superhero? I'm a pop culture junkie.
Crypto?
No.
There's some people in the comments throwing around Crypto pretty. And
Ace the Bat Hound. The Ace the
Bat Hound, yeah.
I don't know.
There's
that
some Lockjaw debate happening here, but Lockjaw's not a dog, I believe, technically.
Yeah. But, I mean, also, there's bats. Bats. Doctor Strange's ghost dog.
Okay.
Man, there's a couple, but
I mean, I would agree though. I got to side with Clifford. Bats is not badass.
The question
he's
that
a ghost, chatty ghost dog.
The question that I ask is, what happens when this generation of like 6 and 7 year olds who love Paw Patrol get a little bit older?
I'm forward thinking.
I'm an '80s kid, and I came up with Don Bluth, you know, like The Secret of NIMH and Land Before Time and all that. And you know, that was very much the style that we were gunning for. And what we're seeing in I honestly believe superhero movies are languishing lately. Because I go to Box Office Mojo every Monday, and I've been paying attention to the numbers. And you know, we can get into the whole woke conversation, because I do think diversity is a good thing. But let's take that and put that over here. The thing is what's the style? You know, like in that's the thing about a lot of these superhero movies. Like it ultimately just throw some CG at them, and I'm like, I don't give a shit. Like if I like my one of my favorite scenes from I think it was the prelude. It was Age of Ultron, where you had Tony Stark and Cap, and they're sitting outside the farmhouse, right? And they're having the debate that's setting up the Civil War, right? And then you know, Cap, you know, tears the piece of wood in half. And every time I finish a box of tissues, I tear it in half like that. And I always feel like Captain America. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, once you like, you know, I love occasionally watching the end game scene in audience reaction where somebody filmed it in the cinema where, you know, Tony Stark goes, and I am Iron Man. And the audience just goes, because you had so much building up to that. And I feel like I haven't really cared a lot about a lot of superhero content apart from that. I mean, I loved WandaVision, but like so many other things, I'm just kind of like, if you're just going to throw CG fights at me, like I can get that on in a game or in YouTube. Like it's the context. You have to have heart. That's the thing is like, it's harder
to do that over and over again, I think. And that's when it becomes a little bit more of an overly burdened formula, I think it gets a little tricky to find the heart that you're talking about.
Well, that's why we have the postmodern superheroes. That's why The Boys is huge right now. And even Gen Z was actually really good.
Yeah, you know? It was great.
Yeah, the girl who had the metaphor for, you know, bulimia as well as the self-cutting and all that. Like that was speaking to that younger Generation Z, right? Like whatever the generations are. I've lost track of this.
Nobody knows. Don't worry about it. I think to your point, that works really nicely here with the book. What you put together is it's always really grounded in Scrapper's journey and these creatures that he's meeting along the way. And it's really beautifully done. We had a couple of questions here that were unrelated to Scrapper that I wanted to throw you from the comments. I don't know if this is an inside joke or something that actually happened. Edward Doherty says, I heard Cliff once did a set of push-ups during a game pitch. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. When I was getting ready to pitch, my nose is just itchy. I'm not doing cocaine, I swear.
we can all do. We're a little loose here. Everyone can do
it.
We're all doing different types of drugs.
I never did cocaine because I know I'd love it. I'm more of a weed guy. Anyway, when I was getting ready to pitch Gears to Microsoft, I put on Eminem's Lose Yourself. Cliche, I know.
And, yeah.
when I'm doing a whole bunch. And that was back when I was like kind of getting yoked, because I think there's a direct relationship between how yoked you are as a dude versus how miserable you are in your relationship. I'm like, I'm incredibly happy. And now I got like a little bit of a dad bod, and I'm not even a fucking dad, you know? But yeah, that's actually true.
And a question for Cliff, Hadestown video game when?
I don't know how you could actually do a Hadestown video game. Maybe do something like Parappa the Rapper, where, you know, you know, like a Guitar Hero style, you know, like hit the beats. But the key at the end of the game, in order to win it, is don't turn around. Because if you guys are familiar with the myth, you got Hades, Eurydice, Orpheus, the whole nine yards. And I'm not going to do the full pitch, but basically at the end of the musical and the myth, if he doesn't turn around, he could have taken Eurydice out of hell. But spoiler, he turns around, and there's always people crying in the crowd, and it's fucking magical.
Great.
Oh, that's awesome.
Maybe a Gears musical then as well.
I actually did see the Evil Dead musical years ago in off Broadway, the first three rows were deemed the splatter zone. So that's the thing is, if there was a Gears musical, there we'd have to wait for the money shot for the chainsaw, and then we would have to have our own splatter zone. But again, Microsoft owns Gears. And, you know, I've put out the offer. They can call me if they want me to consult. I have plenty of ideas, and I like money.
Just to throw it out to you to follow up on that, I've had this note in my phone for like 20 years at this point, back when I was doing sketch comedy. I wrote down an idea and I was like, I have no idea what this is. What about Gears of Love? Have you thought about that?
You know, one of the things I wanted to do, like before I decided to kill Dom, was to end Gears with Marcus and Dom turning to each other and just...
Yeah.
There you go.
Get it.
And that's the thing is, like, you know, I love, like, drag shows, right? Because drag queens are being vilified right now, right? And it's like, now it's more likely to be your church pastor, guys. Come on.
Yeah.
And I love going... So I go to drag shows and I'm like this, right? And I love seeing the boyfriends that are drugged to the drag shows, right? Pun intended. And I love seeing, I'm like, what's up, Brad? You got a little tingle in your dingle? You get a little bit confused right there, buddy? But yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, I love the shared experience, you know, in video games, comics, you know, and to see, you know, people at the comic shop, like, talking about, like, you know, what's new? What's the new floppy? What's the new Robert Kirkman? What's the new Todd McFarlane and things like that? What are the underground ones, right? And to, you know, for Broadway to be there in the theater, and there's this moment that happened in Hadestown where, you know, this woman in the front row was sobbing, and I can't remember his name right now. I'm spacing. Thanks, alcohol. Hermes takes out his handkerchief and hands it to her in the front row, like. Breaks the fourth wall totally, right? And that's the thing is, at the end of the show before COVID, you know, there's a part of the song where they would say, we raise our cups, and basically, like, the audience would raise them, and those in the front row would actually clink glasses with the cast. And for me, that's the thing is, my next jam that I want to explore is stand-up comedy. I love stand-up. Again, laugh, think, cry. And, you know, we go to shows all the time. I've somehow become friends with a bunch of them. Like, Patton Oswalt and I are DMing and shit, and I got to go backstage and get fucked up on Doug Stanhope's vodka one time. became friends with Erica Rhodes. I think it's because I did the Rogan podcast like 3 times, and I've been to titty bars with Rogan, and I've smoked his weed. It's been a journey, guys.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty wild. I do want to get back to Scrapper just for 1 second before we start to wrap
up. Well, real quick, guys, the irony is today my proof of the hard...
Yes,
hardback came in, and it's you know, the first thing I do,
you gotta smell it. New that's where the smell. Cocaine is. That's where the cocaine is.
If you've done it right, that's
I quotes from Seth Green, Jim Lee, and Gary Whitta, and Felicia Day on it.
Awesome, nice.
But you guys were talking about Jim Lee real quick. He's a friend of mine. I've known him for years. His wife Carla is wonderful too. Actually, in my office up there, I have an image where I asked him a favor for my wife's birthday a few years ago, is if he could draw her as a superhero.
Oh, wow.
And nice. He did it, and he sent it to me, and then I was like, fuck, because he didn't sign it.
Oh, no.
So then I'm like, I had to send it back. Now it's lovingly hanging in my office, and he respected the girls. I'll leave it at that.
Right. Just to ask about the Scrapper, though, just to get back to that for 1 second. So the hardcover is coming out next year. Now,
April.
Now that, not next year, this year. Oh, my God. I'm still saying next year on all of my podcasts. No, you don't like that one, Justin.
I like it.
Thank you.
Good variation.
Now that you have that pretty much done, now that you have the copy in hand, are you looking to do more Scrapper? Do you want to do more comics, or is it on to the next discipline for you?
It's. I have multiple IP that I've been working on. I had literally have Scrapper Volume 2 like doc like on my second monitor right now, so I'm iterating on ideas. The question about Scrapper is, you know, dogs don't give birth to just one dog, they give birth to a litter. So are there siblings out there, right? That kind of thing. Also, what's outside the dome, and why is the dome even there in the first place, right? What's with all the fucking robots, right? But I also have this IP that my wife and I developed that I'm hoping to collaborate with Alex DeCampi. You guys being pop culture junkies, did you ever see the 1970s, 80s movie with Farrah Fawcett called The Burning Bed?
It sounds very familiar, yes. But the only movie I've ever seen is Equilibrium.
Yeah.
Okay,
very limited palette.
We'll get back to The Burning Bed, but the whole scene with the puppy in the trunk, and that's when you realize he's like, fuck this shit, right? That was legendary. Anyway, so Farrah Fawcett has this abusive alcoholic husband. It was a TV movie at the time. And then eventually she's got the kids. He gets drunk one night and she just says, fuck it, throws a bunch of kerosene on him, burns the whole fucking house down. And wow. So I basically have a version of that that my wife and I again worked on that's for the cosplay generation. And there's a convention involved. There's a supernatural storm. There's all sorts of things like that. It's called Effigy. And I'm trying to work with Alex DeCampi on it because she's been just the one-stop shop of I give her the outline, but she vibes. She gives me notes, and then she lays it all out, and she corrals the artists because artists are artists because she acts as a producer as well. And that's also the thing about Scrapper real quick is that talk to my lawyers, and I'm promising her a cut of if this thing blows up, fingers crossed, she gets a really solid cut of everything across anything if it becomes a TV series or a movie or a toy line or a video game. Because I'm a big believer in, rewarding talent. And the thing is, a Scrapper wouldn't exist without Alex working with me. The fun story about how Scrapper came to be is that I was making an IP at Epic that was about a girl who could control the world at a molecular level. Like she had a 3D printer essentially in her hand. She could make a tank with her two hands, all sorts of stuff. Right. Got canceled, blah, 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 blah. But the thing is, the designer of the game Prototype that I'd hired named Eric Holmes introduced me to a guy named John Nee, who used to work at Marvel and used to run Cryptozoic, Magic the Gathering. Oh, wow. And John and I became fast friends. And then John was the one who introduced me to Alex DeCampi. And then, sometimes creatives just click. And that's the thing is, my other tattoo is, Harold the Purple Crayon on my left arm. And it's saying create. Because I think if you're a creative and you don't create, you have to be like a shark and just keep moving. And so that's why I have these other properties. I have this other one that's kind of like a futuristic version of Roller Girls, but with guns, called Shopping Tarts. Like, it's
very dangerous without guns.
So. Well, the thing is, I think AI could potentially fuck us all, but I think it's very useful for kind of getting a pitch together. And so, last year I sat down in Midjourney and I was just like, Gary Coleman in the movie Heat. Boom. 3 minutes later, that's what I get. And it's just like, it's such a fascinating thing. And yes, there's some controversy there because it looks like they did scrape ArtStation in order to get like their kind of source material, the grist for the mill. And that's, there's times I've generated an image and I can see the artist signature blurred out in the bottom right. And I'm like,
you're like, this is awkward.
Yeah, not cool. But yeah, it's, I like just making worlds. And I was at San Diego Comic-Con this year, which I love. Like, I don't go to the video game cons these days because, it's all my peers are going to be like, well, are you going to make another game? I'm like, let me consult. We'll see. And but I had a signing panel for Scrapper, and I'm sitting next to Alex DeCampi, and this woman comes up to me, must have been, 50, and she starts crying. And she says she wants me to sign her Gears stuff, and she says, Gears of War saved my life. And her husband's behind her like this, and then I start fucking crying. And I'm like, that's the thing is, I like money, I like to eat, but at the end of the day, as a creative, you want to know that you affected people, right? And it goes back to, you guys, Doctor Who fans?
Alex, I am. I got
so I'm another weird flex, but okay, I'm friends with Karen Gillan. And when we were at Comic-Con in Raleigh, she came and we had lunch and hung out. She's just an absolute sweetheart, lovely, talented. But there's the scene where they take Vincent van Gogh to the Musée d'Orsay, right? Mm-hmm. And he struggled to sell paintings during his life, right? He went crazy, cut off his ear on an absinthe binge, right? And then, the doctor, Matt, takes him in and, then asks Bill Nye, again, not the science guy, the British actor, and says, what did Vincent's work mean? And he says he was one of the greatest, if not the greatest of all time, and he was a great man. And the actor who looks just like Vincent just starts losing it. And the thing, and the music starts swelling. And that's the thing is, as a creative, at the end of the day, get paid. But when you have that feeling that you affected somebody, I've made multiple properties that people have gotten many tattoos in their bodies for. And that to me is like one of the ultimate honors. And that woman crying on me was just, I was thunderstruck. Now I'm referencing AC/DC.
You're AC/DC.
That is an awesome story, Cliff. That is so cool. And Scrapper, not to keep coming back to it, but also very cool as well. Yeah. Cliff, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you for talking about it. Love the book.
Yes.
Again, the book, the hardcover version is coming out, I believe, April 23rd. Is that right?
Yeah. I believe so, yeah. All right. Tonight I'm going to have to sign more friggin' book plates. So.
Oh, man. Well, okay. Hopefully we gave you a little
draw
break.
Draw some weird pictures.
There I got to just can't draw dicks because it's PG-13. So
yes,
exactly. That's a rule.
Thank you guys so much for having me. My wife is making a mean chili right now, so I'm gonna gorge.
Get
right
it.
Now. All right,
go get it. Soak up that mimosa. Bye bye, Cliff.
Take care, guys. Cliff.
All right, there we go. Once again, that is Cliff Bleszinski, and the book is called Scrapper. It is out now from Image Comics, all 6 issues, or you can get the hardcover coming April 23rd. And folks, we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions.
Yeah.
And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments over on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, X, I think takes comments and questions now. I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens. But regardless, earlier, we didn't talk about this. We talked about this off camera. So Brett Macris, a.k.a. Straight Bullet, a.k.a.
Straight Bullies,
who designs or curates drinks for us every week, took a vote on our Patreon Slack and came up with the number one drink that he created from last year. And of course, it ties into the number one movie of 2023 as well. It is Shazam-ly, the Shazam Fury of the Gods themed drink. You made it and finished it, right?
I did, Justin. It was great. It's way better than the movie.
It looked glorious.
It's great. I made a little lightning bolt.
You made a little lightning bolt. Lemon peel lightning bolt. Love it.
It was good. Gin, Campari, limoncello, egg white. Shake it up. I think there's and orange liqueur of some sort. Very good cocktail. Straight Bullet. Where's this? We got to get a book out with these cocktails because they're all fantastic.
They are. Pete, what are you drinking?
Oh, man. A little land shark. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Knock, nice. Knock.
Ooh, Jeff at the door?
Landshark.
Nice. And I'm just having water tonight. Just water for me. Ooh, you're having a Bel Air sour now.
Yeah, Brooklyn Brewery. Great sour beer.
Excellent. All right, let us go to questions.
I've been to the Brooklyn Brewery.
No, Pete. You're not a New Yorker.
Great question here from Edward Doherty. What are your favorite comics of 2024? Great question, Edward. That we're actually going to be covering in our December 26, 2024 show. So please keep asking every week. We will get back to you.
Stay with us. Yeah.
Yes. Just hang in there.
It's probably Transformers, though.
Oh, great. We got a question here from Joshua Wright. Alex, my resolution is to work out more. Can I get your routine down and see the pic again for inspiration?
No! Great question.
No, I don't have it on hand, so I can't possibly.
Alex, just lift your shirt up. We don't need the picture.
No. I mean, I'd have to show you the picture because that's the right lighting.
Oh, put your shirt down, guys.
I'd be too embarrassed otherwise. Yeah. But basically, you just got to like today, I ate 3 enchiladas for lunch. So that's part of it, I think. That's definitely part of it.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. A high enchilada diet. That's what The Rock uses.
Yes. From Schreckler, what's a comic you really like because it reminds you of an unrelated book, TV show, movie from your childhood? Mm. It's obviously pivoting off the Equilibrium thing, which turned out much better for me than I thought it would.
Yeah, really? That had a very low success rate, if I would say. High failure opportunity that you somehow got lucky. John Ridley just knew his shit top to bottom. Because that, honestly, I was like, I barely remember.
No, you called out the one scene. This. I know.
Truly amazing.
Of a truly book, TV show, movie from your childhood.
Interesting.
Always with the stumpers, Schreckler.
Yeah. Well, this one's a little bit of an inside out ski question because it's a comic that reminds you of something else from your childhood.
That's unrelated.
That's unrelated. So, I'm trying to think of because also it's something that maybe you just saw in your childhood and didn't move on from or don't revisit very much. Secret of NIMH that Clifford said is a great answer because that's something very much in my mind. Maybe Mouse Guards right there next to Secret of NIMH in a way.
Interesting. Nice.
Stray Dogs reminds me of Don Bluth movies.
Nice. Good.
Yep.
That's very slightly unrelated.
I'm trying to think. There was a comic that we read recently, and it kind of reminded me of like some Miyazaki stuff, but I can't remember the name of it.
Well, we did a bad job with that one. It's Horror's 50th anniversary. What would be his best story and team story? Pete, I'll go to you for this one. For Wolverine's 50th anniversary this year, what do you want to see with him solo story-wise and team story-wise? For solo story, I feel like if there was some sort of story where he could like go to a bar, just like wanting to be alone, and then he gets into a fight and it just gets worse and worse, that would be pretty cool.
Actually, it would be. So go fuck yourself, because I know you're trying to make fun of it, but actually you complimented it. I don't know. Yeah, I hope we get a great Wolverine solo story. That was usually fun. And yeah, there's always a good like team, like maybe an X-Force situation would be awesome for
that X-Force, all sharps.
All sharps. Gotta keep it sharp, you know what I mean?
I think we gotta throw Wolverine back into the no clothes computers hanging off his body face.
Weapon X.
The Weapon X stuff.
Mm-hmm. I would love to see, this isn't gonna happen, but I would love to see Jason Aaron come back for another Wolverine and the X-Men thing where he was the headmaster of Xavier's. That was a fun era that was absolutely wild.
And it was a fun era.
Was that Humberto Ramos on art for that book? I feel like.
I don't believe so. No, it was someone else.
Was it Chris Bocciolo? They have similar styles.
It was similar to both of them, but a little more composed lines, if I remember.
It was a little different, but it was great.
Look it up. Why don't we go on to this one, though? Joshua Wright says, what are your most sympathetic villains? Who did you want to win?
Nick Bradshaw, Michael Tillman says in the comments, and that's who I couldn't think of, but yes. Sympathetic villains. I don't know. Mephisto, I guess, is the first one that comes to mind.
Thanos is the first one that comes to mind.
You wanted Thanos to win?
Well, I mean, the logic is sound. If we got rid of half the people, the Earth would be less.
They show how that doesn't work in the movie.
Yeah. I don't know if you've seen the movie.
He was trying ideas. You know what I mean? He was putting it out there.
Just brainstorming. You can't fault somebody for that. You make mistakes and then you move on. You know.
I believe him and Bill Burr have the same philosophy. They're like,
wow, Pete, you're all over the place. You're on Thanos' side, and then you're saying that Bill Burr and Thanos are the same.
I mean, on the Marvel bent, I would say Namor the Submariner is probably the most sympathetic villain, like the hero now. But him as a villain always worked, and the whole relationship with Sue Storm, a lot of heat there.
Wait, what now, what's your take? You're like, he could be a dick because he had a crush.
I'm like, no, we can't. It's good. It's good romance fodder. You just don't agree?
I mean, I like the interplay there. I know Pete hates Reed Richards. So does that, Pete, I don't know if we ever talked about this. Does that mean you want Sue and Namor to be together?
No, I think that
you respect Sue.
Sue needs to either get a divorce, and if she wants to, she can be with whoever she wants, and if that's who she chooses to be with. But yeah, it's always bothered me that Reed Richards is a horrible partner to Sue Storm.
Interesting. My most sympathetic villain, I mean, hard to say. It's interesting, and we'll actually talk about this maybe in the stack a little bit, something I want to bring up. But Doctor Doom has lately become this sort of strange figure in the Marvel universe where he's like everyone's bud.
Do we want to move on to one last one here? This is Nelson Kelso says, seeing as how the last guest had an issue with the new Mario game, how's it going, Justin? Aren't you playing? Also, what's the last video game you played, Pete?
Great question. I am playing Super Mario Wonder. Loving it. I feel like I'm getting close to the end, so I've actually slowed down a little bit and easing into it. I'm up to the final Royal Seed. And then I don't know what happens next, but I'm just got to beat the Swamp World. And then I go face Bowser himself. Really enjoying it. The special world levels are so hard that I'm saving those for later.
The last video game I played was Super Tecmo Bowl. But Wow, that can't be true.
No, I mean, I played it recently. I have a Nintendo, you know, so I play that on the regular.
Flex.
But yeah, I have a Nintendo Flex. What? But the last video game that I played in an arcade was Marvel vs. Capcom, one of the great rare moments where I was playing really well.
Really? All right. And that is it for your audience questions. Boop, 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 boop. We are now going to move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 to Midtown Comics Online. Because if you had $25, you'd get some comic books. That's right. We need a brave volunteer. Or Londis. We got... Nobody gets the Long John Silvers. We got to stop bringing it up. 24 is a new year. It's a new us. Let's.
You got Michael T in the comments coming in.
Ooh,
we
got a David Quinley or a Michael T. I think they did it simultaneously.
Oh, simultaneous.
Oh man.
Maybe Michael T. Michael T. hasn't done it before. Nothing against David Quinley. Could be wrong about that. I don't really pay attention.
Edward Doherty already trying to crack my code. All right, here we go. Which one are we going with? We going with Michael T?
You're in charge of trivia. That hasn't changed.
Okay, all right. Well,
no, I'm Pete. I'm in charge.
Oh, now Michael Tillman's like, yo, who's this Michael T guy? Oh, my God.
Hey, Pete, can you stop? Oh, that was
ooh, nice. Too quiet too for everybody.
Yeah. Wait, hold on. Hey, Pete, can you stop
sucking on a cheesesteak?
And instead get with it and just choose who you're going to choose.
So all right, great. Stuck it on
Michael or David Quinley nicely gave it up for Michael T. So we're gonna have Michael T. do it. All right, here we go. Today's trivia is on the most powerful panels in comics, according to WhatCulture.com, and a small nod to the legend Michael Nussbaum, R.I.P. Would you please?
Is that on loop?
Stop.
All right, sorry. I'll put on the correct music.
Thank you.
The music's on now, for real.
All right. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Have some respect for the Nussbaum, all right? We're trying just to have a small nod here.
No,
all right, here we go. Question number one.
Bigger nods. Can we get bigger nods? Why are you holding on to these small nods? Give us big nods. Dude,
no, man. It's all about the small nod. You know what I mean?
Oh, I want a huge
nod. You don't want to bring down the whole room. Just take a second. Acknowledge some people who have, you know, done some great things.
Let me ask you, Pete, when I die and you do trivia and mention my name, can it be a bigger nod? Can it be like a medium-sized nod?
I'll give you a medium. For you, you get a medium nod, all right?
Yeah, I look forward to that. Well, I'll be dead, but my children will watch for the medium nod.
I doubt it.
They will.
All right, here we go. Question number one. What iconic image was number 10 on the top 20 most powerful comic panels of all time? Was it A, Bane breaking Batman's back? B, Elektra being stabbed and, you know, seeing that Psy poking out of the back of her shirt? That was such a crazy panel. Oh, man, that's a...
physically difficult to imagine.
Or was it C, Debbie Derryberry?
Or was it D, this panel? Is that the panel...
Do you want to do this?
I'm just wondering if this was the panel that you were referring to.
Alex, visual
do you
aid.
You want to take over
aid.
The, you know, because I know you're doing daily podcasts and you were taking all my trivia stuff. If you just want to do this, that's fine. You know
I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. I'm just trying to give you some inspiration going into the new year.
And know? Honestly, it helps me think to see that image. No, I think this came for Michael T.
Oh, okay. Did he get it right? Did he get A?
He said A. Yes.
Also,
he
did
is
you choose
correct.
David or Michael? Because they're both answering.
I chose Michael.
Okay.
David was nice enough to step aside.
All right. I think Michael probably got it because he got to see my ripped abs.
Yeah. Straight bullet, I pick AAA, Appa Appa Alex.
So... what's upsetting is you're claiming those abs. You do not have those abs. Those are not your abs.
Sorry, which abs? These abs? You mean?
You say that's stolen ab valor?
I'll stop. Go ahead. We're already running long on the show.
Oh, my God. All right. Question number two. What was number two on the list? Was it A, Batman and the Joker sharing a laugh? B, Spider-Man's superhero suit in the trash? Or was it C, Chip Hipkins?
These names sound more made up than ever before in 2024. The C names are insane in this. Small nod to the C names. You know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, Michael, it is A. But because you said B question mark and that wasn't your real answer, I'll give it to you. It is.
Yeah.
I can see why you would think B. You know what I mean?
It's really interesting. So when he saw the picture of B with the abs, he got it correct. And when he didn't see it, he got it incorrect. I mean, there's. I don't want to make a weird correlation there.
Alex, that's science. I'm just mentioning. And everyone knows on a quiz, if you put a question mark, you get to go again. And only when you put an exclamation point. Is that when you really guess it?
We've all seen Billy Madison. We know how this works. All right, question number three.
The ultimate quiz show, Billy Madison.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We are all now dumber listening to you. Okay. What was the number one most powerful panel? Was it A, Spider-Man holding a dead Gwen Stacy? Or was it B, George Whipple? Or was it C, Sam Whipple?
I got to say, there's so much comment popping off about Alex's ad picture that it's insane. This is the whole, I'm working my abs.
You're
just leaning
correct,
back
Michael. It is A. It is A.
Wow. Congratulations, Michael. We are going to send you an 8x10 photo of me with some ripped abs just for playing. So shoot us an email.
Don't jip them for $25. $3.
It costs at least $25 to get this made. I got to get it laminated as well.
You have to laminate.
So he can draw himself kissing me.
Would you mind just laminating the abs? That's the only part I need laminated. No problem.
You're gonna request that at Kinko's.
Yeah.
Can I just get the abs laminated?
Just the abs, miss. Wink.
No problem. We do that. We get this all the time. What was the secret movie you were referring to, Pete?
Oh, I was referring to the 1990 TV movie, Archie to Riverdale and Back Again.
Oh, Archie, you say. Interesting.
I will say, Alex, that's not enough of a connection for you to show that picture. Whenever no, anyone said Archie,
I pushed it too hard that time. You're right. I'm sorry. You know what I didn't push too hard is the fact that new comic books are coming out all the time. I got to push that harder, and I got to push you guys to come up with some choices, some big choices about what you're excited about that's coming out this week. Pete, what are you excited about that's coming out in comic book stores this week?
Well, of course I'm excited about Titans Beast World Tour, Atlantis number one, and Birds of Prey number five.
Justin, what about you?
I got a shout out, Once Upon a Time at the End of the World, a series I've loved that recognized in our favorite comics of last year. That was fantastic. We got a great issue of Love Everlasting, Ministry of Compliance number two that we've discussed quite a bit. Very excited for that as well.
And I'm going to give a shout out to one that Pete's going to absolutely hate, but really interested to see what's going to happen in Fall of House of X, number one, that is ending the Krakoa era. We've also got Batman 141, which has the Mind Bomb storyline, which has been some absolutely wild stuff from Chip Zdarsky. And what else? You guys mentioned the other things. Oh, I'll throw out Marvel Meow, number one, which is
characters
playing with a bunch of cats.
What are you?
Well, hey, listen. I'm just saying stuff that I haven't read yet that I'm excited to check out. We'll see whether I like it or not. You know,
Alex, let's just put the fight at the top of the stack. You know what I mean? We'll get it out of the way. You know what I mean?
I don't know what will happen. We taped the stack live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. And that's
it's
exactly
live.
The artifice of what we're talking about here. Anyway, yeah,
we do it on the floor of live? The.
The trading floor down at Wall Street. That's why there's the noise in the background. We're always ringing the opening bell. They're reviewing a bunch of comics. That's how it works. Anyway, it comes out Wednesday, 9 a.m. in the Comic Book Club feed and its own dedicated stack feed. So check it out. And folks, that is it for this week's show. Thanks for hanging in there. Thanks for watching. I want to thank you to our awesome new guest, John Ridley, Don't forget to check out Ministry of Compliance. The second issue comes out tomorrow from IDW. Cliff Bleszinski. You can check out Scrapper. The hardcover is coming out April 23rd. You can get the initial issues now. We have another big show coming up for you next week. Min Lee is going to be tired to talk about the new graphic novel Invite Me, and Charles Soule is going to be back on the show to talk everything Star Wars, 8 Billion Genies, and all the other millions and millions of other things
everything he's doing.
Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram and TikTok, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more, until next time, see you at the Comic Book Club.
Woo!
Sit on crappy couches and they let the secrets leak. And occasionally they